Hi, everyone. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, the number one female-focused food podcast in the universe. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. I hope everyone is doing okay, and I appreciate you tuning in during such a challenging time. For today's episode, we're airing a special talk I did during New York Fashion Week, which seems like a million years ago, with Norma Kamali live in front of an audience at Spring Studios in Tribeca. Norma Kamali is an icon. She's been a fashion designer since 1969, and her entrepreneurial spirit has kept her in business and at the cutting edge all this time. Norma also has been a wellness proponent for decades, and today shares her self-care tips on social media. Some of those might come in handy right now. Before we get to Norma, let's thank our sponsor, The Wines of Rioja, for supporting Radio Cherry Bomb. Rioja produces an incredible range of styles, reds, whites, rosés, and sparkling wines. To learn more, visit riojawine.com/US. To keep everyone connected and up to date, we just launched a new daily program, Radio Cherry Bomb Live, via Instagram Stories. We usually go live at 11 a.m. EST, and we've had great guests, like Rafael Espinal, the new executive director of the Freelancers Union, who is fighting for the rights of contractors, gig workers, and hourly employees. If you're a freelancer, you should join because it's free, and there is strength in numbers. And Sophia Rowe, wellness advocate and Cherry Bomb cover girl, who talked about smart ways to store food and build a pantry. Also, if you're a small business owner or service worker in financial need, visit cherrybomb.com/resources for a list of possible sources of help. We'll keep updating this list as we learn of new initiatives. Now, here's my conversation with Norma Kamali.
I grew up in Staten Island, and as a young woman growing up over there and reading fashion magazines, Norma Kamali was this magical name, as you can imagine. So fast forward, and Norma is as relevant today as she was four decades ago. You were dressing Farrah Fawcett and Christie Brinkley back then, and today the Kardashians are fans, Gwen Stefani's a fan, Priyanka Chopra. It's amazing. So the question is, has Norma Kamali had nine lives, like a fashion cat in those fashion glasses? Has it been a roller coaster ride or smooth sailing? We're here to find out. Are you ready to tell us all your secrets?
I'm ready.
Everyone wants to know. Okay. All right, so let's go. So much is a flash in the pan today, but you've stayed relevant for a very long time. What do you attribute that to?
I think early on, one of the wisest things, and when I was 18, I was so smart. I don't know if I can ever be as smart again, but I did decide that I wanted to have a creative life, and I enjoyed the process so much. And by having that commitment, you really have to believe in your authentic self, no matter what else is happening. And so that's the one word of advice I could give, is just stand behind your authentic self, and it will survive. It just does. When you try to be somebody else, it's very hard. So I think we appreciate people when we see that they've done something, and when they change to be good for everybody to love them, it never works. So not everybody's going to love what you do, but those who do will be there with you.
So you knew you wanted a creative life. When did you know you wanted to be a fashion designer?
I went to FIT. Actually, I always wanted to be a painter. I went to FIT. I had a painting scholarship and a scholarship to fashion illustration at FIT. And my mother kept saying, I think you just need to learn how to type, because this art stuff is not going to get you anywhere. I said, I will never learn how to type.
Wait, is my mother here? Did you come, Mom? My mother made me take a typing class in high school.
Yeah, I didn't. But I had a job interview from my fashion illustration in the Garment Center, and I walk into this office, and this guy has his feet up on his desk, and he's eating a tuna sandwich, and I'm so nervous. I've thought of nothing else but having the most spectacular portfolio. He says, put your portfolio down over there and come here and turn around for me. And I hear my mother saying, you better get this job, you better get this job. And so I turn around and I'm so humiliated and embarrassed, I ran out crying with my portfolio, and I just told my mother I didn't get the job. And I looked in the Times, there was a job listing at Northwest Orient Airlines, and I got a job. I don't understand how I got the job, but in sales, in the office. And this was 60s, and I traveled to London round trip for $29 for 4 years every weekend, and London was just starting to happen. And that's before that it was Mad Men fashion, which I had no connection to whatsoever. But when I was in London, I said, this is my soul, this is who I am. I brought clothes back, I opened a little store for $285 a month, brought the clothes in, sold them, and then I started to make clothes myself. And that's how I sort of fell into it.
So if you read your Instagram bio, it says designer since 1967 and advocate of a healthy lifestyle since 1980. So you know the next question. That begs the question, what was going on for those 13 years in between?
Well, the truth is nobody was thinking about anything healthy, just we were going to live forever. Baby boomers were, you know, we own it all. We're not going to. But I became interested in a healthy lifestyle when two of my very best friends died of AIDS. My birthday is June 27th. One friend was June 26th, and the other was June 28th, and we were like this. And they died in a six-month period, and I was devastated beyond. And I'm an action person, and since it was about the immune system not being able to keep them alive, I decided to try to learn about the immune system. So I went west. I went to California and Arizona, New Mexico, met people who were talking about alternative health and wellness, but the word wasn't used then. It was more about understanding options for building the immune system. And then in 9/11, I opened the Wellness Cafe because I thought everybody's immune system is compromised now. And I sourced and curated and developed products that would be alternatives to personal care. If you're brushing your teeth, why not use a toothpaste that cleans your system and pulls bacteria out, or a mouthwash that alkalines your system as well as doing what it's supposed to be doing. And so I've had this parallel life in this area for a very long time, but it really came about because of the loss of two very dear friends.
You know, and that was, you're talking about from the 80s up until 2001. That was way before designers were lifestyle brands and yeah, dipping their toes into food. Did you encounter a lot of what is Norma doing? Is Norma crazy?
Well, I understood that having a conversation about that would really, people think if you're a designer, you're a cuckoo bird anyway. So I thought, I don't really need to add any more to that definition. So I kept it very quiet, and I was very personally entrenched in it. And then when I opened the Wellness Cafe, I would have talks and invite people to see films on food, and Michael Pollan was really writing books early on, and I don't know if you know who he is, but you should really read his books if you have any interest in this topic. And so amazing people came out of the woodwork, totally knowledgeable and very stimulating conversation. And we would have classes, different workout classes and teas and tea ceremonies and all of that before you could find any of it anywhere. So there was a hidden culture interested in the early 2000s.
All right, I'm going to pull you back to the 70s and the 80s before we get to that decade. So 1980 was also the year Studio 54 closed.
Yes.
And I did not hang out at Studio 54, but I did a little research. I couldn't believe that Studio 54 was only open for 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it burns so bright in the mind of every fashion person, even fashion people who weren't alive in the 70s. What was your connection to Studio 54?
Well, it's an odd story. Actually, Ian and I were girlfriend, boyfriend, very quietly.
Ian Schrager, the co-founder
and
of Studio 54.
Ian is still my best friend and introduced me to my soulmate. Thank you very much, Ian. But Ian was and is one of the most extraordinary people I've ever met and extraordinarily talented. And his ability to create an experience for people every night and all of the big nights was just something you couldn't imagine. And we all talk about creating an experience for people in this new world that we're in, but he still is the master of understanding how to transform someone's life in a night. And that's why each night was like a year, and it just left a memory. Now, I never have done drugs and sort of am very sober. So being in Studio 54 was not something I could do. So I never went to Studio 54. Everybody writes that I was there and is sure I was there. I would go before to see what everything looked like, because I'd hear from Ian and see sketches and pictures of different things they were working on. And I would go in and take a look and see what happened. And then Steve would call throughout the night to talk about what was going on.
So Steve Rubell.
Steve Rubell. So I would know what was going on. But no, I was never there.
That's hilarious. I couldn't find any pictures of you there.
That's
so it's like, what did she wear when she went to Studio 54?
Oh, I have a picture of you there. I said, well, that's good. Was I having a good time? I was like, no, I don't think I was.
So you were the one person who did not have to wait online or have any trouble getting in the door, and you stayed home.
But my staff actually dated his staff, and so they were there every night. But they were the best staff, the best hardworking group I'd ever had, because I don't know, I mean, they would work late, take a nap, get dressed at work, go from work to Studio 54, and come in and work like nothing ever happened. And I was like, okay, this is whatever's happening, I'm not questioning.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably didn't want to know what the secret was to that. So, all right. So speaking of Ian Schrager, you interviewed him for your podcast.
Yeah.
And of course, Norma has a podcast. And he called you the most creative person he knows today. And I was curious, I mean, obviously we all know you're creative as a fashion designer, but how else does that creativity that he's referring to manifest itself?
You know, I just think it's a mutual admiration society between us, and I think that's probably what drew us together initially. So I truly am complimented by him saying that, but I don't know. I mean, thank you. That's all I can say.
How do you recharge your creative batteries?
I'm like the Energizer Bunny. I think it just keeps going, and I am very much into restoring and meditation and sleep, so important. And if any of you have a problem with sleep, you have to work on that really, really hard, because it is with the stress that we're in, and if you're in this industry, it's so important to focus on that. So I think restorative, working out every day is really important.
So you really do work out every day?
Absolutely. Oh. You can ask.
Marty, does she really work out every day? Okay. At least once.
And
when did that habit start?
A long time. I mean, I used to, if there's a dance party, I'm dancing. I'm there. So
I'm not Studio 54 dance
not
party.
Not there.
Right. Okay.
But I always dance, and then I just, when there were less clubs and less places to go, I just started working out forever. And I love it. I think it's really key. You know, at 74, I feel my body is not in pain. I'm feeling good. I don't feel any age in my body. And I think if that's part of the protocol of your life, especially as you get older, you never feel unable to do anything. So working out is critical.
And you share a lot of your workouts on Instagram. Has everybody seen these? Yeah. You have to look at Norma's Instagram account. Is that because you just want to inspire other people to do it too?
I did a few, and because people asked me to do it, and then I thought, oh my God, I mean, I'm putting all my clothes up and everybody's like wanting me to do more exercises. So I did, and I'm writing a book, and part of what the book is about is healthy lifestyle and aging with power. And so I'm putting my exercise routines in there and diet, exercise, sleep techniques. And so I'm going to start videotaping more of those.
When is the book coming out?
We moved it past the election because we thought that might be an interference. So we're going to do early 21, okay. January.
Very exciting. Who and what inspires you today?
I'm easily inspired, I have to say. It can come in any form. It can come from the sound of a song or just seeing something pass by or Instagram. Or I just get in touch with anybody that looks like they're doing something great. I don't care if they think I'm annoying or not. It's like, so people say, no, I'm not interested in talking. I will hunt people down if I love what they're doing. So, you know, I'm a bit of a stalker when there's inspiration.
You must love Instagram then.
I do. I think that there, I think it's, you create your own magazine, and it's my personal little file on people I love or things that are really exciting or interesting.
I want to go back a little bit. You mentioned that you had gone to FIT and you had that disastrous,
yeah,
terrible interview. I was curious, back then, what jobs were open to young women in fashion? What jobs were open to young men in fashion?
Yeah.
Was it different?
So this is early 60s, 63, and FIT was one building, if you can imagine. All the girls, and there were a lot of them, were dressed as if they were going to a fashion show every day. And I wanted to be a painter, and there were a few of us that looked like the kind of people that all of those other people would never talk to. And so hats and gloves, and this is girdles, right? We're talking girdle time. We're talking...
Okay, some people might not even know
stocking.
What a girdle is in this room.
Do you know what a garter belt is? Do you know what a girdle is? You know, it's like, it's that, you know, the Madonna cone bras. That was like a real underwear set. And not comfortable, not... I still don't think it's sexy or pretty, no matter how you look at it. And so there was a mentality in FIT, and it was more about a good part of the population were girls who liked clothes, and it was something they could do, because the 60s were still not a time where women worked. I mean, it just wasn't what happened. But the fashion industry at that time was still not about brands. It was Norman Norell and famous designers like that who were American. And then there was European fashion, which was very much the center of the universe. And so it wasn't until John Fairchild from Women's Wear Daily really decided to take Saint Laurent and make that name a brand. And then from that, American designers like Ralph Lauren and Calvin Klein and of course Halston became the American brands. But that's in the 70s, not the 60s. So the 60s were still not about being a brand or being a famous designer. you would work at a manufacturer's or something like that. And I didn't even really have a clear picture of it because I really still wanted to be Michelangelina. I didn't want to, you know, I wanted nothing of this fashion shit I was seeing there.
Sounded a little too bohemian for FIT.
I was so out of place. I was just so out of place. I couldn't understand. I thought fashion is just like rigid, horrible. But then when you rethink it and you see clothes that nobody'd ever done before, nobody wore a miniskirt. Nobody wore a skirt above their knee until London. Nobody ever thought about the uniqueness of shapes of dresses and that were happening, and everything about it was so much my personality. It was like a bohemian deciding clothing was what they were going to do. And that was so comfortable for me. And I found my personality immediately. And of course, gone were the girdles and the garter belts and the stockings, because now it was tights and pantyhose or bare legs and boots and just a whole other thing, a different way to move your body. You didn't have to take your breasts and put them into cones, and it was just, you know, you didn't have to wear a bra. It wasn't, you know, none of that was important.
The pace of change seems so radical right now, but it sounds like it was equally as radical back then.
It was. It's very similar time in so many ways, but because this is so much more evolved and more advanced, and I'm so happy to be here now. As much as I love the 60s, this is really an extraordinary time because we can communicate so easily with one another, with people around the world. This is just an extraordinary time.
Well, good transition, because you can control the message to an extent today.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about using Instagram like your own magazine. I want to talk about the fashion media. I mean, I've been a lifelong student of fashion media. I've been very lucky to work at fashion magazines over the years. And looking back, my opinion is that the fashion media really prioritized the stories of male designers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was to the detriment of female designers, but I'm curious, when you look back at the heyday of fashion media, you know, the 70s, the 80s, were they telling women's stories?
To be absolutely honest, I'm personally a feminist, but throughout my entire career, I was never consciously thinking that I'm a woman, and mostly everybody who is powerful, has a name, is a man. I just thought I'm in the competition and that's it. I really never did. And so many of the things I did were feminist moves, very big feminist moves, but I never felt competitive with men and that they had the upper hand. I felt other things, but that wasn't a big problem for me. I don't know why. I was very lucky to get recognition, maybe more than I deserved. I don't know. I got a lot of recognition. There were times I felt that other people were getting recognition for things that I did, but that's life, you know, get over it and move on. You have another idea, just do it. So there's a lot of things that are unfair and fair, but I never felt that men were having a priority over my own personal vision or goals. And I suppose if I go back and dissect it, I could find things. But to me, what was more offensive were the situations like that job interview or some guy in a negotiation, you know, that I might be having with all men, who more in the business side of it, who after I win the negotiation on the way out pats me on the butt and says, good job, and you want to just turn around and strangle him, but you keep quiet because you won you got the thing done. So those are the things that would just drive me crazy. But it wasn't the creative part of it that I felt it. It was more being a businesswoman in a man's world. That was very difficult many times. But you know what? That was what I had to get through during that period of my career.
We're going to get to you as a businesswoman, but I have one follow-up question. You know, it's the same when you look at the big fashion brands today, though. For some reason, they still seem to prioritize hiring male designers. Mm-hmm. You know, you really can count on one, maybe two hands, the number of big brands that have female designers leading their houses.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And maybe women prefer male designers. I mean, there's something I find curious about that there is an imbalance. But I think there may be more. The population of male designers may just be larger than the population of women designers. But I don't think that's forever. I think there are so many talented women. I mean, it's a time for women now. Don't forget, we understood that it was harder in all areas to get out there. But there are so many talented young women who are doing things that no man could ever think of because it comes from a feminine spirit. So there will be more, and there are more now, and there will be more, and there'll be more of a balance. And I think a woman understanding a woman's psyche is such an advantage. And I've never tried for a demographic or to try to reach women in a certain way. It's just I feel here, and my clothes say it. And other women connect to it, and other women say, oh, I could never wear your clothes. And I was like, that's okay, that's cool. So there are more women who will do that and are doing that now. And we know, we see them, and it's so inspiring and great. And it's important that people like me help support them and be mentors so that there is more of a balance.
I think on the indie side, certainly. I mean, Ulla Johnson showed today. You've got Maria Cornejo, Rachel Comey, right. On and on. It's just those bigger, more well-funded
houses. Well, I don't know that bigger is better. I'm for me, being the most famous or the richest designer in the world was never my priority. I wanted my creative life, and I want to be successful. I want to have a good life. I want to have a staff that are compensated in the best way and are given privilege for the work they do. But I don't need to be the richest or most famous. And I don't think women have to have that feeling. We don't need that. We understand the joy of having an art that we love or having a love for something. And there are men, too, that feel that way. Bigger is not always better, and we're seeing that now where all of these big companies are becoming one big company, and then what? You want smaller, you want unique, you want interesting, you want variety. You don't want to see the same clothes on everybody's collection.
Have you had investors over the years?
I've had opportunities to have investors, and I have to tell you, there were times when I wasn't sure if I could pay the rent, and I really could have used investors, but the voice kept coming in my mind saying, you want a creative life. Do you think by giving your name or by having this partner, you will have a creative life? And I found other ways to collaborate and do things where I can control my company. So I still own my company, I'm happy to say, after 52 years. I appreciate that. I truly appreciate that because it's not easy.
We'll be right back with Norma Kamali after this quick break. Hi, Bomb Squad. Do you know about Rioja? Rioja is the premier winemaking region in Spain that's home to more than 600 wineries. Rioja produces an incredible range of styles, reds, whites, rosés, and sparkling wines. Rioja is the only wine region in the world that releases wines when they are ready to drink, meaning wines are aged in barrel
and bottle before they are released. Every bottle of wine from Rioja is marked with a color-coded seal indicating how long it's been aged according to Rioja's unique classification system. You can find the seals on the back of every bottle. I have two bottles of wine from Rioja in my kitchen right now, a Tempranillo from 2018, which has a green seal. Interesting fact, Tempranillo is Rioja's hallmark grape and indigenous to Spain. I also have a 2015 Reserva with a purple seal. Reserva is a type of Rioja wine made from the best grapes of the harvest. If you'd like to learn more about the wines of Rioja, visit riojawine.com/US. Back to my conversation with fashion designer Norma Kamali.
Did anyone ever come to you to try to buy Norma Kamali?
Yeah. But then, you know, I was like, oh, if you do that, then what am I going to do? Because you're going to take my soul and run with it. So, no, I still love what I do. And I'm so happy that I'm still doing it and that I didn't do that. And I have friends in the industry who tell their stories of, you know, really cashing out, making a lot of money, but my heart hurts for them that they're not really living out the creativity that comes with what we do.
I didn't realize the Norma Kamali Omo, is that how you pronounce
it?
You've probably seen that label that Norma has. I never knew what OMO stood for. And in researching you, it stands for On My Own.
Yeah, On My Own, OMO. And so I got married at 19, so smart and not. And I married a very handsome Iranian student who was also 19. And when I was bringing clothes back from London, I said, we should really open a store so that I could sell these things. So I really sort of pushed him into it. And we found this store for $285 a month. And he would sell the clothes, and I would make them in this little room in the back. And as fate would have it, by the 10 years later, we had so little income, and he obviously was going to Studio 54 every night with my sales girls and whatever. So I thought, I think I need to leave this. And it was very hard because nobody really knew me. I was in the back sewing away, and I had $98 to my name. And under a very difficult situation, I had to leave to save my soul. And I really didn't know what I was going to do. I had no plan. I just left. And I had an apartment with a mattress, no curtains, nothing. And I remember crying a lot that night and thinking, this is not looking good. And then I learned that I had to tell my story. I never spoke. I was so shy and intimidated by everything. And so I was meeting someone from a magazine, actually, and I never met with anybody. And I had this appointment, and I didn't know how to break it with her because I had no information. So I met her, and she said, what happened to you? And I was like, and I told her what was happening, and she got me sewing machines, and then somebody else helped me. And before I knew it, people were helping me, and I needed to create a new name for my own company, which was On My Own Norma Kamali, because I couldn't use Kamali again on its just by itself. And so On My Own was my brand for that period on, and sort of by 2000, I stopped using it, but it was very good to me.
But what a manifesto to have at the time.
Yeah.
All right, so you had $98 in your pocket. So let's talk about the evolution of you as a businesswoman. So did you have mentors over the years? Was it the School of Hard Knocks over the years?
It's everything, right? I think the most important thing, and intuitively I did this, I'm very good at just calling people up and asking questions. And I've learned, and a great suggestion to anybody here who wants to know something, who's doing what you, or in a way that you like, just call them and see if they'll take your call. And you will be surprised. I mean, I get calls from people I don't know all the time, and I always take the call. If it's somebody I can help, because so many people help me, it's my turn, and obviously you do. So I did that a lot, and that was incredibly helpful. I eventually got a really good lawyer and a really good accountant that were so good for me and gave me great advice and were extraordinary as far as being on my side. And that was super helpful. But I, in the end, had to make the decision. There were very few women in the 70s for me to call or get in touch with for support to say, how did you do this? I didn't know anybody. I didn't know a woman that had her own business. I truly didn't. And never mind a business in fashion. There were women like Joan Bernstein from Brown's who had a business, and she would give me advice, and I would ask a million questions. But for the kind of thing I was doing, it was really my personal adventure, and you make a lot of mistakes, but there are many times where you're absolutely shocked that things are working, but you know nothing lasts forever. And over 52 years, it's like, oh, this. So if everything's great, fasten your seatbelt, because it isn't going to last forever. And so you have to get ready to understand what it's like to fall and how to pick yourself up very quickly and move forward.
All right, we have a few minutes left, and I know all of you are so excited to be in the same room with Norma, and you probably have some questions. So we'll open it up to a few questions if anybody wants to. I have more questions I can keep asking. Anybody? All right, since you're all shy, I'm going to throw out a Fashion Week question. I was thinking it's so funny we're here and it's New York Fashion Week, and fashion shows really haven't changed that much in decades. Still, models put on clothes, they walk down a runway, they come back, and then the show is over. You are so modern. Are you surprised that the show hasn't evolved that much?
I am. I really am. But I think for every generation, a fashion show is a new thing. So I understand why it exists and still is important. I remember in the early 80s, I was doing sweats, and we were selling a tremendous amount of clothes, and I had a really big advertising budget. And I decided to use the advertising budget to make fashion films. So I would write these stories and make a film of it. And I thought, I think this is good because it's sort of pre-Sex in the City, kind of. Everybody has a character, and so I was doing those, and I thought, I think this could be a direction. Well, I was the only one that went in that direction. But it was also the time when MTV started doing music videos, and I thought, gotta be FTV, fashion TV with fashion videos. No. And we have so much technology now, and we have social media, that I do think this is an area that could very well find a new way to show fashion, and it is. But we like experience. So in the end, a fashion show still is an experience where like-minded people come together, get dressed up together. We like to get dressed up, so it's a place to go to get dressed up. I don't think fashion shows are going anywhere, but I do think there's room for a new format or platform for fashion.
Where are those little fashion movies?
I have them. They're very funny.
I've actually won
awards for them. We're just pulling them all together. I have so many of them. One of them is The Reading of the Will, and it's six women who all dated or were married to this one guy, and he dies, and he has them all come to his house for the reading of the will, and they have dinners together, and somebody breaks into the house at night, and they're all out in their lingerie. It's very, I don't know if you know the movie The Women from... It's very inspired by the women.
Sounds like a full-length feature.
It's 25 minutes. And the truth is, I used to get Barry Sonnenfeld was one of my DPs before he became famous. And I would have lighting guys that would work on major films who were in between films. So I would dig up all of these great people and do... They're really funny and sort of primitive, but they're cute.
How funny. All right, we have one question, and we'll wrap it up.
I know you said that you haven't struggled so much with feeling like a woman against all the men, but I wonder whether in the perspective of being a female business owner or in the fashion industry or just as an entrepreneur in general, if you have any advice or experience about how you've dealt with people trying to, like, get you to work for free or work for less or drive down pricing, like, how do you keep yourself up?
Yeah.
You know your value.
That is so hard in any industry, especially when you're desperate for an opportunity. Like, just let me show you what I can do is all you're saying in your head. And then they see your passion to do that and they take advantage. So I think you have to, and unfortunately, or fortunately for me, it comes with age. So aging is good, and that gives you the confidence to say, I don't think so, you're going to need to pay me. And I think you have to imitate what I just said and use that, because you have to hold your ground. You have to, no matter how desperate you are, to show how talented you are, and I've been there, so I'm understanding. You'll just get taken advantage of. It's human nature. It's a sense of what people can get away with. And you have to keep one thing in your mind. You have to walk away when it's not right. You have to, whether it's a relationship or a job or an opportunity, you walk away. You will never be sorry for walking away. And sometimes when you walk away, they don't let you. So I just say, keep that in mind. The walk away is an option you have, because there will be a time when you can show your talent. There will be. It's going to come. Just keep the passion and it'll come. Good luck. I hope you find a way with that.
Judy's our boss. Can we take a few more questions? Okay, Judy, you're the best. All right. You have the mic. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm curious how, once you've opened up your cafe, gone to Michael Pollan, how maybe your eating habits or what you decide to eat has changed and evolved, and also what is your spirit vegetable? Hi, Carrie.
Yes, so for a very long time, look at food as medicine, and I really believe what we eat is fuel for our well-being and our health. How we eat, how often we eat, how much we eat. I love colorful food. I love vegetables. I feel it is critical for everybody to understand how much bad food there is out there and how important it is to take your kitchen, clean it out, and have a refrigerator and cupboards filled with quality food so that you don't make mistakes in the middle of the night when you think you're hungry and you eat garbage. I am a big proponent of doing whatever you can to have beautiful, healthy food. You don't crave junk food when you develop a taste for quality food. I love vegetables. I think one of cauliflower is not known to be a very, like, the top healthy vegetable, but I like it during this time when I want something to crunch on when I'm nervous eating. So I make cauliflower. You have to try this. It's so good. Olive oil, just cut up you know, little cauliflower bunches, right, in a bowl, olive oil, fresh lemon, lots of it, sea salt, and turmeric. Like, make it all orange and powdery, and then mix it up, and it's so delicious and crunchy and good, and you get anti-inflammatories, you get great, delicious olive oil and lemon, and it's so yummy. If you don't eat it all, you put it in the fridge, tomorrow it's even better. So for me, that's like eating crap, but not really. And it's really yummy. I promise you, if you try it, you'll be, this isn't so bad.
Do you have recipes in your book?
Yes, I do.
Good, good. All right, we can take one more. We've got somebody back. Oh, okay, we'll take two more questions and then wrap it up.
Hi. Do you have a favorite garment that you've designed and a favorite person that you've dressed?
It's really hard to have a favorite. It's really, I mean, it's 52 years, right? So how do you pick one out of all of that? I think usually whatever I did last, I'm still sort of hopped up and excited about. But there are things that I've done throughout my career that fill in the sustainability category, which is real, has always been important to me. So I think my sleeping bag coat is a good example of that. So you can have a sleeping bag. I made my sleeping bag coat out of my sleeping bag. I was camping. It was cold, and I had to pee in the woods, basically. And so I took my sleeping bag, and it was so warm, and it was a September night. And I thought, I'm going home, and I'm going to cut up this sleeping bag and make a coat out of it. And I did. And I didn't waste one piece of the sleeping bag. I used every part of it, number one, good. And the fact that you can have a sleeping bag coat for as long as you live, if you just clean it and take care of it, we never, ever dry clean anything, especially the sleeping bag coat. And so if you just wash it down and store it away in the summer, it will last your lifetime. So I really love something that can last. And I love something that has a resurgence every time another company discovers puffy coats and they want to make them. And then I just have so many people saying, we want more sleeping bag coats. So I think I'm happy about that one, but also others. And there isn't one particular celebrity that I can say. I've never reached out to celebrities to say, I'll dress you for free, or you can have free clothes. I've never done that. And I have always had celebrities wanting me to do something for them, which is such an honor. And in my book, I'm also going to do a thank you to all of the celebrities through the years, including Elvis and everybody else, who by shopping and buying from me helped sustain my career. And not only because they were spending money, but by doing that, they were giving me exposure. And so I feel like I owe so many of them. And Elvis, by the way, would buy the same dress for three white dresses, gowns always, same dress for three different women, all blonde. And that this would go on, and it was great. And I was so happy, and I wasn't even an Elvis fan at the time, and I thought, this man is helping me, like, stay alive. So I am so grateful to, Cher bought so many clothes for me at a period of time where I thought, I don't know, she doesn't understand that she's keeping me afloat. I mean, this woman's, like, magic. But I love thinking of people as characters and designing for them, so that's fun. But I do love doing clothes for dance. I love it more than anything, and I love designing Twyla Tharp's dances. I just, all of that movement is very much what I'm connected to? Thank you. That was a good question.
Great question. I'm so sorry we have to wrap it up here. I wish you were, I think all of us wish you were like our life coach, our big sister, our all of the above. You have been such an inspiration to me and I know to everyone in this room and to the whole fashion industry. So thank you for persevering and doing everything you do. You're remarkable, Norma.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Norma Kamali for sitting down with me. Our conversation was part of a New York Fashion Week series organized by IMG and sponsored by the Glenlivet. Thank you to the Wines of Rioja for supporting Radio Cherry Bomb. We really appreciate it. And I think I'm going to have a glass of wine right now. Radio Cherry Bomb is edited and produced by Jess Seidman. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Thanks for listening, everybody, and hang in there. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hello, Cherry Bomb Radio. This is Maritza, and I am the owner of Puerto Viejo Dominican Bistro and founder of Pisqueya. And who do I think is the bomb? Me, for taking on and continuing my parents' legacy with our brick and mortar in the heart of Brooklyn, and also for creating a Dominican brand to share our flavors with the rest of the world.